you're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips. This episode, we'll be talking about two internet topics. Because I don't know if they're going to take up an entire 20 minutes or not. That's why we're going to cover two of them and some of the ramifications. And it may come a point in time where we may have to talk about what ones will be exploring further in another episode. I think one of them may deem some exploration with co-hosts in the future, but I'm just going to give my kind of Reader's Digest version of the thoughts of it. So without further ado, I'm going to get into the GDPR, the European Union General Data Protection Regulation. I took a class on this because I wasn't very well versed in this. So I wanted to kind of acknowledge what this is, and I understand it now. I took a class on, I forget what the website's called, but it's Udemy.com, which is actually a great place to take online courses for cheap if you're not doing like the EDX method. And honestly, I probably would have done the EDX if it weren't for the fact that it costs so much. And as you know, in the past from me doing the superhero class, I'm a big fan of EDX.org. But Udemy seems to be another one where you can get a pretty reasonable and legit certification from, because again, it's a lot of college professors doing this. But they give you like kind of this massive discount on certain things. And so I did this intentionally so that I would be GDPR certified, so that I knew what was going on, what goes into it. The class was a little difficult to follow. I added it to my LinkedIn just as another qualification that I know how to do something. But I think that it's very important to understand the very strict data protection rules and the job of having this policy and compliance checklist, having a data compliance officer for whatever organization you have. And it's kind of anytime you take well, and also you gotta have a data breach notification letter letting people know, so like sample text for consequent forms, and how to avoid costly penalties for non-compliance. So, and essentially, from this information, you get a comprehensive set of rules designed to keep personal data of all European Union citizens collected by any organization, enterprise, or business safe from unauthorized access or use, which went into effect on May 25th, 2018. And basically, the law greatly affects the manner in which every business transaction involving those citizens is conducted from that point forward. So essentially, what it means is a small company, say located in Texas or somewhere else or Michigan, collects personal data from a customer residing in Paris in order to sell and ship a cowboy hat or, a collectible action figure or DVD or something to the security provisions of the GDPR. And so importantly, they'll be liable for any penalties imposed by not following the provisions. There are no exemptions for size, scope, location, or first offenses. You fail to meet those provisions, you will incur penalties. They kind of have that three strikes rule, three strikes and you're out, where one of them leads to a $20 million euro fine. Or 4% of your business profit, whichever is greater. So essentially, like us, we would get screwed. So organizations that ignore it are opening themselves up to uncertain liability, substantial risk, and potential financial hardship. So it suggests that a course of action is required, and including establishing procedures, protocols, and policies that address and meet the requirements of the law. So essentially, if we do like a survey or a form or a questionnaire, we have to give people notice that it's being recorded. So like a little checkbox. If you're signing up for a newsletter, you have to say that's okay. You have to tell everyone what you're using their data for, however much it may be. And there's different levels of the GDPR notification depending on how much information you have to take. You have to also tell them how long you plan to use that information, how you plan to use it, who you plan to share it with. And if they accept all that, you still have to have a way for them to require a download of all of their data. And they also can request that you have to delete everything associated with them, which is perfectly legal if they're from the UK or the European Union. What it essentially is going to break down to as well is, now if you're commenting on a message board or a forum or not a message board or forum, but like you're using, you know, comments on a blog post, they don't necessarily have to go through all that and remove it all. Like that can stay, but like any identifiable information they have about you, whether it's like name, email, birthday, last name, you know, phone number, like it, depending on how in depth they go, like us, we only ask for the first name, email, you're good. Like, it's not, I don't need to know your, you know, your date of birth. I don't need to know where you live. What's your social security number is, or anything else like that. So I totally understand it. I totally get where they're coming from. Like, there does need to be like some kind of a security crackdown. The only thing I kind of wish is that, yes, it affects anyone that deals with somebody from the European Union, is I almost wish the United States had this. And I say that in terms of that I really don't like them policing anybody for the most part. We should be able to do it ourselves, but humanity as a whole is stupid. We can't police ourselves. That's why there's so much chaos in the world. But anyways, it doesn't mean that one person's better than another to police them, but... anyways, it would be nice because it would be great to be able to go to, say, insurance company A, you are not allowed to submit my information to company B, C, or D. You cannot send my information and sell it to, you know, the highest bidder. You cannot sell my phone number. I don't want you selling my phone number. I want it deleted from all of your records. It would essentially do away with a lot of the spam and a lot of the garbage that we get, the solicitations, a lot of that. Like, because all that, it falls under the totally 100% like illegal almost, if you're dealing with some of that. Especially if you made a purchase, it doesn't mean that, you know, I wonder how that would deal with like software, where they bundle that garbage adware. Like, so say you download something from CNET. And then they make you download a special installer that, in the installer, it bundles another piece of garbage software that's like a paid ad. And then it installs it. I know they ask you if you want to download it, but then they kind of trick you and they hide it a little bit. I wonder if that would do away with that as well, because I find that particularly distasteful, which is why I used to go to download.com, which is owned by CNET, a long time ago and downloads things. I quit doing that years ago. I got sick of it. It just got to be annoying. And so I started finding other places, you know, like, you know, Major Geeks or somewhere like that. It's just, I don't want to play that game anymore. I totally get that. So moving into my other subtopic, which I'm sure is going to be very interesting. We have a rule on social media. So it is unconstitutional for public officials, including the president, to block Twitter followers who criticize them, a court ruled in a legal dispute over President Trump's account. I don't normally talk politics, but I think this is kind of an interesting dilemma here. So anyways, the lawsuit was brought by Columbia University's Knight First Amendment Institute, argued that Twitter users blocked by real Donald Trump had their First Amendment rights violated in a decision. You know, a federal judge hearing the case ruled that Twitter's interactive space, where users can interact with Trump's tweets, qualifies as a public forum, and that blocking users unconstitutionally restricts their speech. The decision rejected arguments from the president's team that President Trump's own First Amendment rights would be violated if he could not block users. This case requires us to consider whether a public official may, consistent with the First Amendment, block a person from his Twitter account in response to the political views that person has expressed, and whether the analysis differs because the public official is the president of the United States. The answer to both questions is no. I actually do side with the court in this instance for a public official, because I think that they should not be able to silence you. You should be heard, but you shouldn't be an animal about it either. And a perfect example of that is, again, going back to the Thundercats roar. Do I like the series? No. Will I voice my distaste with it? Yes. Am I going to be violent and like, that series needs to burn for this, you know, and you know, just start going crazy? No. Like, that's uncalled for. That's over-exaggerating being a jerk. Somebody may like it, you know, whatever, that's on them. But I don't personally like it. So, again, it comes down to, you know, you should be heard. You shouldn't be an animal about it either, but, you know, that should be grounds on reporting harassment. That should be a different entirely issue there. But if he's going to use Twitter as his public soapbox instead of using the radio or television or news programs such as that, or a press conference, if he's going to use Twitter as that is his public forum. Like, that is his place to play and inform people of what's going on. And so basically, you know, they're viewing it as discrimination, you know, because no governmental official, including the president, is above the law, which is right, and all government officials are presumed to follow the law as has been declared. That is right, too, although none of the politicians do follow the law. But anyways, they disagreed with the court's decision and considering more steps, which I don't really see how you can consider that, being that it's kind of in our, you know, bylaws, our constitution. Like, it's, you know, you start blocking free speech, no matter what side of the spectrum you fall on, you become as bad as, like, when the revolutionists and the British were fighting. I mean, it's, you're almost at that same stage. And it's really sad, to be honest. So anyways, this is the, this lawsuit first filed last year was closely watched by First Amendment rights in the digital age for relevance, because it's the president's preferred speakerphone. So I'm kind of on board with that. I kind of understand it in that, you know, if you're a public official, you're elected to do a job and you want to shoot your mouth off. That's kind of the road that you're going to have to do. You're just going to have to deal with it. Suck it up. Big, big boy. Just deal with the people that are pissing and moaning about you. That there's really nothing you can do about it. Legally, or, you know, or you could just not manage it and just not be on social media during the years that you're in office, and kind of just, you know, kindly shut your mouth, because mouth overloads butt multiple times. So yeah, I'm not really sure what's going to go down with this. It's definitely a thing that's going to have to be watched as time goes on, so to say. So anyways, what do you guys think about some of those different topics there? We'll have to turn back to some of these as time goes on. So I wanted to end this episode on a lighter note, because I kind of explored the internet for sales, and I subscribe to different things for different things. I found a website called Mighty Deals, which is almost, in a sense, like Groupon, but for digital stuff. I'm not in any way sponsoring them or sponsored by them. I'm just mentioning this because I thought it was kind of something cool to go to. If you're a creator of any kind, whether it's graphical websites, just designer in general. So they have courses, they have free things, they have $10 and under things, they have, you know, font bundles, they have graphics and logo bundles, they have software, and I've used them for a couple of things. One, they had a coupon for the GDPR aspect. So I was able to use that. And I'll probably, I should probably put that on the old site, but the new site's going to be launching soon, I think. I think I've got enough done on it to bring it out soon. But anyways, they've got things that tell you, you know, you can design your own WordPress theme. You can do an Adobe Illustrator CC Masterclass. So like, for instance, that's $17 and you get a class. And then I downloaded a software as well called Photo Scissors. And I really wasn't sure what to think of it at first. And it's, I tried out the demo. You can't save anything, but I tried out the demo and I used a variety of images. I used one where it's like me and TFG and Mike from, you know, our first official picture, not during the wedding. I used a picture of the stuff on the site. I used family photos. I used superhero characters from images on websites. And essentially what you do is you, in green, you highlight and you scribble all over the image that you want to save, whether it's a character or something else. I will say animated in a really dark theme, it works really hard, but it does work. I find this infinitely easier than trying to manually create or pull backgrounds, because it uses like a sense of AI to kind of do this a little bit. It kind of helps you figure this out. So you can remove background around hair. You can remove backgrounds around, you know, people, objects, and, you know, like, so if you want to move, you know, people and images, you know, or animals or whatever. It creates a PNG transparency of it anyways. So I used this photo scissors from TRX, T-E-O-R-E-X. And it works because I'm not particularly good at Photoshop. I use Adobe Fireworks, which is old. It's still the CS6. But I use this because I enjoy doing all my, I actually make every one of the graphics on Geekcast Radio that I do, or really anything, in Adobe Fireworks. I have not been a Photoshop person. I don't like Photoshop. I think I'd be more of an Illustrator person if I could figure it out, but there's way too many commands, and I've been using Adobe Fireworks since the year 2002, back when it was Macromedia, so I don't really want to switch unless there's a reason. So anyways, I bought this software because it was like $9. And after trying it out, you can select the marker size that you want. You highlight what it is you want to cut out. Like they use, for example, a parrot. And then they have him standing on a branch. And then they have him with, you know, there's bushes behind him. And you scribble all over the image you want to save with green, this little green plus marker, as it were. And so it looks like a bunch of scribbly marks. And then you use red and do squiggly marks around the outside of the bird, and it smart cuts out the background, just completely removes it. And then so you can drag the image however you want, you can resize it, and then you could physically, you know, put it back. And it works on just about every complex background. You can remove, like I said, around hair. You can remove backgrounds from transparent objects in the real world. You know, some objects are transparent and removing backgrounds from photos kind of damages it. It's kind of interactive, so every time you make one of these changes, it'll redo, and you can change the feathering radius, the aspect ratios. It's super simple to do. Like, you could do this for eBay items. They even say, like, they showed like a handbag sitting on a couch. They cut out the couch and just, you have the handbag, plain background. They show a, you know, they're making a, you know, this girl on the beach move from one spot to another. Like, they physically move her and drag her over. They do this with this bird, too. Like, It's insane. Like, I was like, ah, this is gonna be garbage. And so I downloaded it. I mean, it's like a $20 software, but I was like, this is gonna be crap. And then I downloaded it, tried it out. I was like, oh, that's surprisingly good. So I plan on doing that for more significant arts when I want to use specific superheroes and there isn't an image that exists of them all collectively. So now I can actually do this because Blanchard's required me to do this at points. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. So now I really don't have an excuse. And I can resize. I also did it with comic covers. I didn't want the background, but I wanted this specific image of a character off the comic. And I tried it out on that just to see how it worked. And it worked spectacularly. So I don't usually do product reviews or like software reviews, but this was like pretty simplistic. You don't have to know anything graphically to be able to do this software. It's pretty simple. Like you seriously just scribble on it and then scribble on it with the other and then save it. And it's good. Like it works great. So I thought I'd mention that Mighty Deal site just because I find it to be very interesting to try out. Like they've got other ones where you can add and change photo colors. So like you could take a black and white photo and put it in color. You could enhance photos with other softwares. They have like UX apps. They have various softwares that'll clean up. And then they've got, you know, build your own website type software. They've got plugins for things for Photoshop and other things. I don't know. It's really an interesting site, and I kind of stumbled across it by accident searching for something else, and I was able to actually use it. I, a while back, had wanted ideas for specific art and opted not to do it. And then I just stayed subscribed to the newsletter, and then lo and behold, the GDPR thing came along, and then I did that, and then I saw this, and I was like, oh, let's do it. So anyways, just throwing that plug out there. So I hope you guys have had a somewhat educational and entertaining episode on this. So until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.